Let's go to the coast now and bring in my good friend Tony Knopp. It is great to hear you, my friend.
Aloha. How are you guys?
Oh, listen to this. He's killing
me. I am not in Hawaii. Just in Hawaii.
Just so you know, we have a snow squall warning here for the next hour. So,
Oh, man.
You could be anywhere.
It's raining in Los Angeles, and we've been losing power. If it rains in L.A., it's just the whole thing falls apart.
I know. It's the grid there. It's a mudslide. It's earthquakes.
It's always something. It's always something.
That's why my cousin George left the L.A. Sheriff's Department and ended up going to Idaho. All right. it's true. All right. So there's a lot to talk about here. A lot to talk about. So I want to set up the women's tournament discussion by talking about MLS first.
Yes.
MLS, which is as a family-friendly ticket operation as you're going to get. Like, can they get traction on TV side? What has been their problem as to why they can't get traction TV side?
If you talk to the people involved in the MLS, you know, the one thing that's been really successful about it has been their patience with, you know, the timeline of what it was going to take to create a league that was going to be able to self-sustain, right? So a lot of other leagues that are really prominent in the United States and in North America, especially startup leagues, generally do it as almost like a sidekick. We forget that because it happens a while ago, but there's always something else that's before it, and it becomes a consolidation that creates a league. So, like, you could use the examples of Major League Baseball merging with the Negro Leagues. You could use the example of the NFL merging a national conference and an American conference and then taking on some of the players of the USFL, the NBA with the ABA. The WNBA coming out of the NBA. MLS is different because MLS is a startup, right? It came from nothing. Right. They tried to create a league that didn't have a multiple. There were not a number of leagues that they put together and created one league. You could even talk about the World Wrestling, WWE, as the same thing. They basically consolidated a bunch of smaller leagues that were in place in that infrastructure. And MLS didn't have that. And so what made MLS such a great story on the business side was when they did start it, they had the right investors and they had patience as to how long it was going to take them to reach traction. And they've done that fantastically. But as you noted, the one thing that hasn't happened as quickly as they'd like to have happened has been television. And what if you talk to the people that are involved in it, what they will tell you is they misunderstood the North American appetite for European soccer.
Yes.
So their belief was not that they didn't know that the package of European soccer was going to be so well consumed and watched here that it ends up on NBC and NBC's networks. And that's been the biggest concern for them is they're not operating on the attendance side. They're operating in a vacuum. They don't have to compete with Manchester United or City or La Liga or Serie A or Bundesliga. They don't have to compete with any of those clubs. But on TV, they do.
Yes,
because the fan has the opportunity to say, do I want to watch, you know, West Brom play City or do I want to watch Portland play Seattle, right? And that's where they've been hurt, is they underestimated, because when they did kick off the league, you know, if you wanted to watch European football, you had to find, you know, somebody who had a satellite at a local bar and was willing to watch it at 6 in the morning. And Europe has picked this up, and they've even changed some of their scheduling so that there are games that are more friendly right. with the timelines in North America.
Yep. Well, it's like, do I want to watch the NBA or the G League?
All right. Exactly.
I mean,
right?
With all
it's
due
exactly what it is.
With all due respect to MLS. So now I'm trying to do this in some sort of order here. The next one's going to be the NBA has, I think actually publicly, I don't think it's quietly, they'd like to triple their rights fee if they can. I think the triple is the word that was used. Which means they want to go from 2.6 to about 7.5 billion per year. Now, right now, it's 1.2 TNT or Turner, 1.4 ESPN ABC. All right? Can they get there, in your opinion?
I don't know. There has been, for those who don't pay attention to it, I mean, and that's most people, they're not in the business of sports, so you're not reading about this every day. As cords have been cut and people have moved to more streamed entertainment, you know, people are watching more Netflix and Hulu and the like, and kids are watching more YouTube, the more on-demand entertainment. The one thing that has maintained subscriptions and subs for Disney, ESPN, for NBC, for some of the major players is live events. And so we keep thinking there's going to be this ceiling on live event spending, and we keep blowing past it, right? It's like the an analogy to, you remember the summer when they signed Alex Rodriguez to the record deal, and baseball owners just went crazy and were signing people to, you know, $15, $20, $30 million deals, and we thought that this cannot continue, right? And we keep thinking that that's going to happen on the right side, but it's not. If you look at the contracts that Joe Buck, that Albert, that Tony Romo are getting now versus what they were, you know, even 20 years ago, I mean, they're 20x what that was. So if you're going to tell me that it's fiscally prudent for a business like an Amazon or for a business like an ESPN to say, I'm going to pay my broadcaster 10 times what I was paying them 8 years ago, maybe it's not that unrealistic for the rights fees to triple.
Right. Yeah, right? But see, but I'm not opposed to the broadcaster getting 10 times more.
Not even a little bit. No. it's a good comp,
that's,
right?
That's just a personal opinion.
Right, exactly.
But you know what? But that's interesting, because even if they don't get triple, say they double, all right? Okay, that's fine. All right. But that contract's coming up. So I'm trying to set this up in an order here. The Big Ten, their contract's up first.
Yeah.
They're on multiple platforms. Fox, primary, ESPN, a 1B, BTN, and people forget the basketball package they have on CBS.
And I think what got lost in what we were just talking about, because this will segue into what we're talking about, is when Joe Buck left Fox, one part of the negotiation was an extra Big Ten game.
Yes.
One game.
Ohio State.
One game was worth him leaving a year early.
Yep.
That's how valuable one Big Ten game is.
Right. And that was and that's what they're going to end up with, Ohio State and Notre Dame.
Ohio State and Notre Dame. It's a no-brainer. Right. Yeah. No-brainer.
Right. So, and that was the trade. It beats a cartoon character. Which was the trade for Al Michaels years ago. All right, so now let's get to the next. So now the Big Ten. To me, the key to all this is competition.
Yes.
It looks like, at least from this vantage point, there's a lot of competition on the Big Ten because it is 25% of the footprint of the country, as you well know, in the work that you do. Is the competition there to drive the number up where the Big Ten, each school ends up benefiting from it?
Yes, absolutely, 100%. The thing that's been interesting is, and this happens in most forms of sports business capitalism, is the exceptional get all of the rewards. It's that old saying that, like, if you're good, you don't get very good rewards. If you're great, you get good. If you're exceptional, you get everything.
Yeah.
And the Big Ten and the SEC are getting everything. I mean, their numbers are almost double now, those two, what anybody else is, even if you're combining them. And so I do believe that in the case of the Big Ten, I think the way that a lot of these carriers are looking at this is it's kind of an all or nothing thing. Like, if you're watching the Pac-12, you know, my Pac-12 circled the drain a little bit, and I think George is the right guy, and I hope he gets it out of there.
Right.
You're saying we've got to go all in on the Big Ten or the SEC, because they're laughing in the competition right now. So I absolutely believe that there is a desire and a demand for that, because as we've seen, live events is the staple that's driving subscriptions.
Right.
And Big Ten football is, you know, I mean, if you want to be totally honest about what's out there as far as ratings, the NFL is king. We all know that. Big Ten and SEC football is right there. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're next. I mean, nobody's in the NFL's category, right? They're getting 40 million viewers.
They are the Escalade of okay,
right? It's not close. Yeah, right. they're so much higher than everybody else. But the package that the Big Ten's going to be able to demand is significant, and I absolutely think there's enough buyers out there. And the problem is, I think that we're going to see the Big Ten and the SEC demand such exorbitant numbers that it's just going to put more pressure on the ACC, on the Pac-12, on, you know, the other conferences that are out there, the Big 12. And, you know, they're going to be disappointed by the numbers that they get, because it's just not comparable anymore. The ratings are not comparable. The amount of money that it brings to them are not comparable. And so, and that takes a long time to change.
In fact, what we're setting up is a Big 2, a Middle 3, and then the Group of 5.
Exactly.
When you deal with corporate partners, are they feeling the same way about SEC Big Ten compared to others?
Yes. So corporate partners are really simple to understand. you'd like them to think about it the way, you know, a fan would want to think about it. But that's they're in the business. There's this guy who used to run sponsorship and marketing for Bank of America, and he's somebody that speaks in our industry quite a bit. And he said that in the end, we're just trying to sell toilet paper, cereal, milk, and the like, right? Mm-hmm. And the best place to do that is to go where the people are. And you pay the premium to get them where they are. And so basically, when you're a bank, when you're a financial services institute, when you're one of these major national sponsors, you're saying, hey, I need to open a bank in this region. How am I going to get eyeballs? Right. And so you have to pay for what it costs in those regions. And quite frankly, like you mentioned, the Big Ten is 25% of the footprint, but it's also major metropolitan areas with high spending power.
Exactly.
Right? That's what the Big Ten has. And the SEC just has so much loyalty. Now, you go to the Pac-10 or you go to the ACC, you have metropolitan areas, but you just don't have the loyalty or the ratings that are anywhere close to what's happening in the Big Ten and the SEC.
Well, again, you're talking about New York, okay, loosely with Rutgers, but New York, Philadelphia, right. Baltimore, Washington, Pittsburgh, Columbus, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Detroit, Minneapolis, Chicago, Indianapolis, Milwaukee, okay? Madison's a good-sized city. Lincoln's a good-sized city. I mean, this is what you're talking about. These are all the kind of markets.
If you talk about the Northeast, though, too, like you say loosely with Rutgers, but it's not really loosely because Northeast doesn't have the loyalty to college football.
No.
So what ends up happening is all of the alumnus from Iowa, from Michigan, from Penn State, they move to New York.
Yep.
And they're in the Northeast, and they become fans of those teams. So just about anybody you meet out there, we do a lot of it. I have an office in New York. I'm there all the time. Just about anybody you meet out there, nobody's telling you that they're very rarely you're going to meet a BC college football fan. And that's about it. Or Syracuse kind of occasionally. You're going to get Big Ten names. You're going to get, I'm Penn State. I'm Michigan. I went to school in Chicago. So even though I may not be a Northwestern fan, I'm a Big Ten fan. They just have that footprint. And it's the same thing in the SEC, just because how much they dominate and how much people are tied to their local teams. And what's really interesting is just the dynamic of the sponsorship between the two of them. You know, the Big Ten dominates national partnerships, right? Which makes total sense.
Yep.
And the SEC kind of does on the TV side, but if you go to an SEC event, it's all local sponsors.
Right.
If you go to an Alabama game, it's all local sponsors.
Yep.
If you go to an LSU game, it's all local sponsors because it's just totally ingrained in where they are. And that's where schools on the fringes are really struggling. That's where if you're like a Colorado or a Utah or a, UW or somebody like that, you just don't have that kind of local representation and national representation.
And you with a UW, for example, in a major metro area like Seattle could do that, but they can't.
They
have too much, and there's too much pro competition. I mean, between the Seahawks, the Kraken are now getting their slice. You know, the
Seahawks, Kraken, Mariners.
And
they have the most robust, one of the top five most robust MLS followers.
Right. The Sounders? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
They're cracking, 40,000 a game?
Right. They've won the championship recently.
It's
just one of those things where the Big Ten is just got this.
Yeah.
He did such a phenomenal job pioneering that last TV deal.
6 years.
And timing it before he left.
Mm-hmm.
And then timing it so that they would be first again.
Yep.
It's just the difference. I mean, you talk a lot about the difference in leadership and how leadership can change things and just how phenomenal the Big Ten leadership has been.
Yeah.
Versus the other conferences, because if you told us that this is what was going to happen like in the mid-90s when the SEC was just kind of on the rise and the PAC and the ACC and the Big 12 were still, the Big 8 were still relevant. I mean, the way they have outpaced, and I just don't think that the standalone fan understands how significant the chasm is in dollars between a Big 10 school and a Pac-10 school or a Pac-12 school. I mean, a Big 10 school is getting, $71 million, where a Pac-12 is getting $35 million. That's significant. That's double every year. And that money compounds. That double becomes triple, becomes quadruple, and then what?
Exactly. Because the Big 12 is not going to get more without Oklahoma and Texas. They're not going to get more.
No.
And that contract's up in 25.
Right. And they're out before 25. They made it clear that they're going to leave.
And they're out. Yeah. And the Pac-12 actually will negotiate next after the Big 10. So now, I've done this.
If USC stays in the Pac-12.
Right. Well, exactly.
Right?
We'll see. So now let's bring up, so I've tried to do this in a level of chronological order. So I've tried to talk about about the contracts that are coming up. Now let's get to the women's basketball contract.
Mm-hmm.
The women's basketball contract is tied in as part of a 28-sport deal with ESPN. That contract is up, I believe, in 25. I believe I haven't even gotten to the college football playoff. I mean that's going to be negotiated before then too, when they finally decide what they want to do with the blessed thing. All right.
Yep. Bill talked about it on our podcast last week. We had Bill Hancock. And he talked all about what happened with expansion and all of that.
Yeah. So I'll ask you about that in a second. we got a ways to go here. All right.
Right.
So now we get to the women's basketball. There's no doubt as a standalone, it's going to get bids. It's going to get a number, a better number than it's getting now. There's no question.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. As a standalone. So breaking away from the other 28, they'll benefit from it. But I know what the cost analysis said from the NCAA when they did their cost analysis of this. But I just outlined people putting money into the Big Ten, putting money into, you know, into the NBA, putting money into, okay? And you already have NFL contracts done. You already have the college football playoff one isn't done yet. The question is, would there be competition for the women's tournament to drive the number up?
It depends on what the number looks like. The problem you run into when you start having conversations about individual sports on the women's side, like they do on the men's side, is it's different schools are driving different value, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, on the men's side, it's kind of this understood yet not loved dynamic that there's basketball schools and football schools, and they base their money on it. And I think the standard fan just wouldn't be able to understand until they saw it, the gigantic chasm between basketball and football, right? I mean, the number's not even close. Like, if you ask somebody on the street, how do you think Kansas hoops does versus Nebraska football, even though Nebraska's been down for years?
It's not even the same ballpark.
No, they're not even in the same ballpark. I mean, it's a fifth of how much revenue they're bringing in. Now, the problem is that is compounded on the women's side because women's basketball does drive revenue, especially in the Big Ten and in specific places. And the problem you do is if you start to break that out.
Here's the breakout. Here's the breakout. Because anybody wants to know what the breakout is, go to a site called Equity in Athletics. Everybody has to put their numbers in. So I put the numbers in. So I used the last reporting period, Tony, before the pandemic. I just thought it was the fairest thing to do. Okay. I can't use the pandemic. Just in the Big Ten, revenues brought in versus expenses, Big Ten women's basketball lost $46.8 million in a year.
Yeah.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
South Carolina is the number one team in the country. You and I know they draw well. They draw well. But they lost $3.2
million. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not that worried about loss numbers because I think those things can be tinkered with, right?
You can make up for it with football and men's basketball. It's
all the way.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. So that's not the issue here. That's not the issue here, which Tony and I are pointing out. Okay. That's why, quote, socialism works in sports. Right? Why do the Green Bay Packers have the same money as the New York Giants? Because they decided in 1961, everybody got an equal share of the TV deal. Okay, so I'm just pointing out, though.
Okay? But it has to work that way. Let me give you a perfect example that you'll understand.
If I can understand it, anybody can.
I use this as an example when I start talking about equity in women's sports, about women's sports in particular. The UCLA women's volleyball head coach, UCLA, best program on the West Coast. If you ask anybody, you know, who's the best team west of the Mississippi, they're going to say probably UCLA, right?
Okay.
Makes $267,000 a year, right? That's a good living, right?
Mm-hmm.
John Cook at Nebraska makes $650,000.
That's right.
Minnesota's head coach makes $550,000.
Yep.
Right? Big Ten coaches are making double what the absolute top coach on the West Coast is making.
Right.
And if you're in a situation where you don't revenue share, and there's no reason for the Big Ten to revenue share with the West Coast, the West Coast hasn't kept up. You're going to create inequity, and inequity is going to hurt a sports growth opportunity in the future.
That's right.
Because you can look at it and say, we don't know if women's basketball is going to be it or if it's going to be women's soccer, which has been getting significantly more it's getting significantly more interest in the last 5 years on the collegiate level than it's ever gotten.
No question.
Right? So I think we're aligned on that, where we're saying it's really difficult to say, okay, well, we're going to go negotiate away from the other 28 sports. Okay, but did we get to that point because we were negotiating with those 28 points before that? At what point does this become the right decision to make? Right? And I don't know what the right answer is. But you don't want to run into a situation. You want to be what you said, where the Green Bay Packers can compete with the New York Giants. And intra-conference, you want to do that, I believe, right? Conference by conference, I'm not so sure that's going to be the case. Who knows how that ends up playing out.
Right.
But if you do it without equity, which is what is happening right now, you're going to end up in a situation where the Women's Volleyball Final Four is four teams from the Big Ten and maybe one from the Big 12.
Right.
Right, maybe Texas sneaks in there or something like that. You're going to end up with a college football playoff. That's the SEC and the Big Ten every year, right? It's going to be
right.
2-1 and maybe 1, and it probably should have been 2-2 last year, right? I mean, if Ohio State doesn't falter, you had a case.
Right.
And that's what's going to be interesting in this negotiation for women's basketball, is just if it really is haves and have-nots, which we are seeing. Right, we are seeing that NFL is a have, and they are pouring a ton of money into Amazon TV. Right, they're giving Joe Buck, you know, walk away money to stick around and do more. They're doing the same thing for Tony Romo.
Yeah.
If you start seeing the Big Ten and the SEC doing double and triple what everybody else is doing, is that the path we want to go down in all sports? Because that's what's going to happen here. Because in women's sports, you have women's softball, you have women's basketball,
yeah.
you have women's soccer, which have been doing phenomenally well. And women's volleyball, as you know, in the Midwest, is a massive revenue generator.
No doubt.
What happens to the rest of the sports?
Well,
right? That's the problem.
So my question to you, Tony, is could ESPN potentially partner with, say, an Amazon Prime and drive the number up?
I don't know. Amazon is so focused on their battle with Apple for the NFL. I think somebody like a Fanatics would be a company that could get involved in growing those sports like lacrosse and growing like women's lacrosse and things that are really starting to take hold at the local level. And I do think that live coverage is something that's being more and more disrupted every day, because, you know, what most people may not, you know, if you read about the history of ESPN, they carried everything, right? Originally, ESPN was just looking for coverage. He started the company trying to do 2 hours of coverage a day, but the satellite carriers didn't have enough content, so they gave him a cheaper rate to pay for 24 hours. So he just took the 24 hours and put on every high school sport he could.
Right.
Right. So theoretically, yes, you know, there would be eyes for this.
Interesting. What are you looking at right now, Tony, that, you know, if you were giving advice, what kind of advice would you give about directions that entities, corporate partners, networks need to go in that to you are good investments?
I think, you know, there's a couple things that concern me right now, and there's a couple of things that I think are good investments. I'm concerned about just how much money is being spent on customer acquisition and gambling. I've got nothing against gambling. Great. You know, my cousin founded Betfair. So, you know, we've been around it. What I'm saying is, like, these companies are so willing to lose so much money to try to get customers that what's happening is they're pouring it all into the teams, and the teams are creating this as part of their revenue stream. And I think that's going to dry up. Eventually, there's winners and losers, and the customer acquisition cost has to come down, and they can't continue to pay these extravagant sponsorship fees. I think the same thing is going to happen in the crypto and blockchain world.
Right.
And I think there's going to be a little bit of belt tightening when it comes to the sponsorship side. And that's the business that we work on.
Right.
If I was a corporate partner and I'm looking to get involved in things right now, I'm looking at leagues that are equitable, and I'm taking the old Ticketmaster approach. So we talk about this case study with them quite a lot, that back in 2009, 10, and 11, the teams that Ticketmaster focused on the most were the Bucks, the Suns, and the Warriors.
Right.
And in 9, 10, and 11, the Bucks, Suns, and the Warriors were awful.
Yes.
I mean, with a capital A, right? But they looked at this and said, hey, these are organizations that aren't the Clippers, right? There will be an ebb and flow, and we're going to ride the wave back up. And I think if you can find your way into leagues like the NFL, if you can find your way into things like the NBA, into the MLS, you're going to have success. I would also put a lot of wood behind the European clubs that are expanding out this direction.
Yes.
Right? NYCFC, You know, they have some of the clubs that are putting money into the local clubs here. I think that's going to be the eventual model, is this, you know, this global focus on football. And, you know, Big Ten and SEC, like we just said, very transparent. They've got great leadership. They've got terrific TV deals. I think this next one's going to be even better than the last one. And the most important thing that they have is they have consistency, right? You know they're going to be there. And their leadership has just been so strong that's where I would focus. But I'm a front runner. I like betting on the big ball. I like betting on the winners.
Yeah,
right?
You've got, but that's how you end up being a winner, is that you bet on winners.
Yeah.
If you're rolling the dice, I think you're rolling the dice on something that you don't put as much into because you are rolling the dice.
Right.
I was going to make that the last question, but I can't. When you mentioned that Bill Hancock talked to you guys. So,
right.
So,
last week.
So what was the conversation like? What kind of gut feeling are you getting? Now, we know this will run out, but, you know, when it runs out, they're going to have to do something with it. So what did he talk about?
You know, he's diplomatic in his take, but he talked really openly about college football playoff expansion. And I think what they've done right, which we didn't see with the BCS, is patience, right? I think when we see this, you and I look at it like fans, right? We say this doesn't make sense. We need to have an expanded college football playoff. We need to make sure that all the best teams get in there. Why isn't this run like, you know, I think we've even talked about, why isn't this run like the 1AA playoffs? They've got the model in place, et cetera. Yeah. And Hancock and his team are really smart about, hey, we understand, you know, that we have plans in place for 23 and 24, and we're trying to get 25 right. And I think that's what made Jim Delaney such a great leader, right? Mm-hmm. We talked earlier, you said, like, who do I bet on? I always bet on people that are just, they have tremendous foresight. Delaney was one of the best.
Yeah.
And I think Hancock sees it as, we're eventually going to get there. I think they're starting, and he alluded to as much, that they're starting at the conclusion that there will be an expanded playoff. Mm-hmm. How do we get there while everybody gets there is along the way. And I think that's the way we're headed.
Yeah, because I said to Jim Delaney, I said, mm-hmm. I said, people don't realize how hard it was for you to get two, let alone four. And he just started laughing. He said, I'm glad you realized that. I know people too.
I think Warren is right there. I think he's taking his time a little bit, but I think you get Sankey and Warren and Kliakoff together, I think they're going to figure it out. I think, look, Pac-12 finally got a decent leader after just years of buffoonery.
Yeah.
The ACC, who knows? Who knows what they're going to do?
He inherited being stuck.
Yeah.
I mean, he inherited being
terrible
stuck.
Terrible TV deal. Just the worst TV deal.
Through 2036, he had nothing to do with it. He's just sitting there and he's looking around going, I mean, he can't do anything unless he convinces, and you and I know it won't happen. He can't do anything unless Notre Dame decides to go in. That's the only way he can renegotiate it.
Yeah, the only way. And there's no way Notre Dame goes in.
Right, exactly. They won't do it.
I mean, they have the number one recruit in the country on campus today, I think I read.
But, I mean, they won't do it. And he's not going to get somebody from the Big Ten or the SEC to jump. His worry is losing somebody to somebody else.
Yep. Lose Clemson, lose Miami, and one of the problems they have is that Miami's just been down for so long, and the new college football universe, which is an arms race, Miami can't keep up. You know, Lincoln Riley, the first thing Lincoln Riley did when he walked in here, and I talked to Mike Bone about it, is they said, look, you have the keys. You do whatever you need to do to make this a competitor. And he walked in at the facilities, which had just been redone 3 years before, and said, wait a minute, football shares a gym with other sports? Yeah. Absolutely not. And they ripped out all of Heritage Hall. And a school like Miami doesn't have the resources to do that anymore. And so what does the ACC have left, right? You have a couple of teams that are competing on a national level, but otherwise you just don't have the resources. And that's what we talked about earlier with haves and have-nots. You're seeing two power leagues. And eventually what I think is going to happen is a couple of independents like a Notre Dame, a USC, just out on their own, saying we'll cut our own TV deals and we'll compete nationally because we're protected by the fact that the schools around us just aren't that competitive.
Right. No, exactly. And you know what? I never thought about that with the college football playoff. You know, just be patient with the thing. Eventually, it is going to happen. You're right. As fans, we sit there and go, come on, let's do it. Let's get it done.
Yeah.
but there's so many – they've got to take care of so many factions here.
Oh, my goodness. You got to take care of all the bowls along the way. you just got to make it known. And you know, he alluded to this. We put it on our website. If people want to go watch it, they can. It's a 30-minute conversation with Hancock. But he alluded to the fact that, you know, when you change something that big for that long, it's going to take some time. And I just think that, you know, they're doing a really good job of understanding that they're going to take some bad PR along the way and people are going to get frustrated. But all that does is make their case stronger, right? It's funny because as a fan, you look at a season like, you know, let's say last season and Ohio State doesn't fall at the end, right? Doesn't lose to Michigan.
Sure.
The more of those seasons we have, the more people like get really angry about, oh, we need to have this expanded playoff. It just puts more pressure on the Bulls, and it makes the CFP stronger. Those are good things for them.
And it puts more
More years we have.
And it puts more pressure on the networks to bid for it.
Absolutely, right? The more years we have where we have four killer teams and two teams that have a great argument, the better. They want UCFs. They want, you know, teams like that that, you know, now they just get more they get more allies. Because if you look at it, you know, what shocks people is the Pac-12 voted against expansion this year. The Pac-12 hasn't been in the playoffs since Washington played in the playoff, what, 7 years ago?
All right. Yeah, 2016.
And they voted against it. Yeah. They voted against it. There's a reason. Yeah. Pac-12 voted against it because the Rose Bowl likes their money.
Right. Well, exactly. The Rose Bowl is an issue that they, gives them a couple more years to work that issue out.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, I could keep going, but you know what we'll do? How about I was telling them earlier. They said, well, it's been a couple months, a few months since we had him on. I said he should be on once a month.
Yeah, so I love it.
It's one of the things
I look forward to the most.
How would you feel about doing that? Because it's, you know, if you want to do it once a month, I'd love to have you on once a month.
So, yeah, no, I think that'd be super fun.
We'll make it,
especially with a season coming. It's, you know, it's, we're only a couple of months away, and you guys got some big ones, some big non-conference ones this year.
Yeah, I noticed. I noticed. I think the coaching staff noticed too when I was at practice. They noticed. All right.
Yeah, this can be a fun one.
My friend, thank you so much. I hope everything's going well for you out there besides the rain, the mudslides, and the earthquakes.
All right. Stay warm in the squall.
Yeah, and it's squalling right now. Perfect.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, buddy.